Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. In springtime, allergies can sometimes be my kryptonite. When my nose is plugged up and my eyes are watering, I feel like I struggle more to do the things I really enjoy. Making dinner, heading outside to get my sunlight before noon, and even hosting the show can be a bit more challenging. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. This double-action combination of prescription-strength allergy medication and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. I've been taking Claritin D for my allergies for several years, and it's been an absolute life changer. My eyes aren't a constant, itchy, drippy faucet, my nose isn't running, and I can speak without feeling like something has jumped in my throat. And I love that Claritin D tackles nasal congestion caused by allergies or cold, and also relieves sinus congestion and pressure due to allergies. Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Use as directed. All right, here we go. Welcome to the 1000 Hours Outside podcast. My name is Ginny Urich. I'm the founder of 1000 Hours Outside. And Gretchen Rubin is here today. Welcome.
I'm so happy to have the chance to talk to you.
Oh, this is just such an honor for me. I have to tell you, my mom, she's been in a book club for, I mean, it's been over a decade, maybe even almost 15 years. And she just recently... She chose one of your books as her pick.
Oh, great.
So she was like, make sure you tell Gretchen. They did the Happiness Project.
Oh, I love book clubs. So tell her that I'm always very excited when my book is chosen for a book club. So tell her very much how very much I appreciate it.
I sure will. So she was super excited about this opportunity that I had to get a chance to talk with you. And I have both the Happiness Project. I know you've written so many books, but I have both the Happiness Project and Life in Five Senses. This is a gorgeous book, Gretchen.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I mean, given the subject, I felt like we really needed to make it just beautiful and compelling and make you feel like you wanted to touch it and hold it and, you know, really a feast for the eyes and, you know, all the senses.
It is. It really is a feast for the eyes. How exploring the senses got me out of my head and into my world. Gretchen, you are so accomplished. One of today's most influential and thought-provoking observers of happiness and human nature. What an amazing topic to study. You're a writer. You have all of these books that have sold millions, millions of copies, 220 million downloads of your podcast. We were actually doing the math last night. Like, I was with my husband. I was like, 220 million downloads. The podcast is Happier with Gretchen Rubin. And that's like millions of downloads a month. Our minds were blown.
It's exciting.
Yeah, you do that one with your sister?
I do. Yes, my sister. My sister is a TV showrunner in Hollywood, but yeah, she's my co-host for the podcast, which is super fun.
That's really fun and really special. How memorable. So there's lots to love. There's lots to dig into here. But this book, Life in Five Senses, is coming out in paperback soon, too. Those are the ones you can easily throw in your bag.
Yeah.
Either way, though, this is a gorgeous book. So we're trying to live with our five senses. This is, and you talk a little bit even about the other ones in your book, but we're trying to get kids outside and we're trying to be more immersed in the natural world. And you wrote an entire book about the importance of this. And your story is really interesting too, that this came sort of out of nowhere. Happens to us, right? You have an appointment. I always think these things are wild, Gretchen. Someone makes a comment to you and it really changes the trajectory of your life and your experiences. Can you tell what happened?
Yeah, so it was a very ordinary moment, as you say, in my life. I got a bad case of pink eye. And so I went to the eye doctor and he examined me. And then as I was getting ready to leave, he said, well, be sure to come back for your regular checkup too, because as you know, you're at greater risk of losing your sight. And I said, wait, what are you talking about? I have no idea. I didn't know that I was at greater risk of losing my sight. And he said, oh yeah, you know, you're extremely nearsighted. And so that makes you much more susceptible to having a detached retina. So if that would start to happen, we would want to find out right away. And I have a friend who did lose some of his sight to a detached retina. So that was something that felt like a very real possibility to me. So I walk out into the street. I live in New York City, so I was getting ready to walk home and I'm looking around and, you know, with all this wonder at the cityscape around me, because, You know, I think a lot of times we don't appreciate something until we lose it or until we fear we might lose it. And so I'm looking around thinking, oh my gosh, this is so precious to me. But of course, did I notice a single thing on my way over to the eye doctor? No, I was just stuck in my head. I was lost in my thoughts. And so as I was having this realization, it was like some dial in my brain just got jammed up to 11. And all of a sudden it was like, I could see every detail with crystal clarity, and I could hear every note, and I could smell every smell. And, you know, in New York City is pretty smelly. And it was all just coming through to me in kind of this almost psychedelic experience for the whole, my whole walk home. And I thought, the funny thing is this is happening all the time. You know, this walk is actually not exceptional. This is happening all the time. I'm just not paying attention. I'm just not plugged into my five senses. And so that showed me that it was something that was really missing from my life and something that I really, you know, and the kind of person that I am very stuck in my head. So I needed to make it into a project and really go about it very systematically because that's how I operate. But, you know, other people do it in other ways.
Sure. And I loved that. You talked about all of your approaches, called it an experiment, right? Approached it.
Yeah.
Making sure that, or trying to be more in tune with your senses. I was curious, you know, you have this life where you're pretty systematic.
Yeah.
And you're checking boxes or however you do it. You say, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that, and be intentional about these different things. Paying attention to your senses is one of those that's a little bit harder to keep track of.
Yeah.
Did you find that once the experiment was done, is it harder to keep up with it?
That is a great question. Yes, indeed. And that was one of my big fears because I was like, well, when I'm not writing a book about it, am I just going to go right back to my old self? So that is something that I think about a lot. One of the things that I do that has been really helpful is one of the exercises that I did in the book was I kept a five senses journal where, and this would be a great thing to do kind of as part of your go outside experience, is like, just write down one notable, you know, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching from the day. And I just did this in like a notebook. I just, you know, scribbled it down every day more just to keep it uppermost in my mind as something I needed to be paying attention to. But then I actually now have made this like beautiful five senses journal, which, you know, is on my GretchenRubin.com, where it's an actual journal. And I do that every day for exactly the reason that you say, because I do worry that given my natural inclination, if I don't have some kind of way to really remind myself, like, oh, you're in a hardware store, notice that hardware store smell, or, oh, your friend has a velvet jacket on, like really reach out and touch her sleeve and feel the velvet of her jacket, that I just won't. I'll just go right back to where I was before I started the whole thing. So yeah, so I think it's very easy to think that something's like very important and very valuable, and then it just never occurs to you to do it. At least that happens to me.
Yes. And the journal, like you said, I mean, what a great thing. What a great thing to do as a family. What a great conversation.
Oh, yes.
At dinner.
It would be a great thing to do as a family. It's kind of like highs and lows that some people do. Yes.
Yes. And in your book, which I loved, in the back, you have, you know, try this at home, a five senses jumpstart. All of these, I mean, so many ideas in here, Gretchen. Five senses jumpstart for all of these different, the five main, what did you call them? The five big, or the, you know, the five main ones.
The kindergarten senses.
Yeah, yes, in elementary.
Because yes, now research has discovered like 33, 35, all these other senses, which are all incredibly important and fascinating. But I was like, I'm just going to limit myself to the kindergarten senses. Those are the ones we all know.
And you have suggestions for further reading. And you know, another thing I love, Gretchen, I loved the chapter titles where you would highlight, it was like a little picture, you know, this is the picture for the eye, for seeing and touching. And I loved that part too. Just little, sometimes the little things are really fun.
In a book.
So great ideas in here, practical ideas. And the journal is a very practical idea too. I think that would be a really sweet gift for someone as well. There are so many things about you that I read and I was, I'm the same way. And I would imagine you say that too often. You know, about being like an underbuyer and trying not to use up your stuff and you can't indulge moderately. I mean, so many of us really, I read books too. I would say that's my main hobby. It was pretty cool to see all of those things. But one of the things that ran through this book was this concept, and actually this is one I relate to too, is that we have a limited time to live. Mm-hmm. It's like runs throughout the entire book. And I was wondering, especially given the breadth of people that you talk with, do you think that that starts, what age, when does that start to weave in where you think, oh, wait a minute, I don't have forever here. I should be trying to engage more with my sensory world now. I mean, your wording was, I was running out of time. One day I'd regret all that I'd ignored. When do you think that starts?
What an interesting question. You know, I think it's different for different people. I think even some children are very haunted by mortality. And then I think for other people, maybe it comes much later, maybe after a big shock or a big loss, they realize. It's one of these things that, you know, great philosophers have always reminded us to think about, you know, remember you must die, and not to take things for granted, and anything could end at any time. But it's just very hard in the busyness of everyday life to keep that in mind. And I think that, again, it's something that for me takes constant discipline to think like, I fall prey to this kind of irrational thought, which is, well, there'll be time later. Like, oh, I'll do that in the summer. There'll be time in the summer, or next year things will be calmer. It's like, no, if something's important, do it now. Make time for it now. Make it a priority now, because you don't know what's coming up. Yeah.
Yeah. And for you, this eye appointment, you got pink eye, which is one of those things that's so random and tends to be something you get more in childhood. So you could have just as randomly not gotten pink eye.
Right. Yes.
And here you have now this journal that people can use, and this whole book, and changes the quality of your life.
Yes.
You talk a lot about too, that this is affecting relationships, which I thought was really a cool perspective, because when I think of my five senses, I think of myself.
Right. Yes.
I think of just me, but you say,
yes,
even though senses are very personal, they affect relationships. My senses held the power to tie me to the people and moments that I wanted to experience and to remember. So one of the things I really loved was about faces and eye contact.
Yeah.
Can you talk about this story where you're holding eye contact? I mean, for just, you know, 15 seconds, it's so short, but it feels so long.
Yeah, eye contact is so powerful. Well, one of the things that was interesting to me in studying the five senses is the brain is constantly editing. It's not an objective reporter. It's deciding, what does Ginny need to know? What's interesting to Ginny? What's not interesting to Ginny? It's like bringing certain things to the fore. And what the brain thinks is really important is other people. So our hearing is particularly attuned to people's voices. As you mentioned, we have like special whole parts of the brain that are just about faces. Because if you think about it, faces are pretty much alike, like, you know, and yet we're really, really good at identifying huge numbers of people, and like from the side and through different parts of their age and with their hair change and all these things, we're really good at identifying faces. We will be very distracted and very interested. And that's why like people complain about things like an open office plan, because when there are a lot of people around and you hear them, you see them and you hear them, you can be distracted by them. And one of the really powerful things that we do is eye contact. And this is, we use it in all these subtle ways. I hadn't even realized, like, by shifting your gaze, you can tell somebody, oh, pay attention to this. This is important. Or for a child, you can be like, copy me. There's all kinds of ways that we when we're in a conversation, we use it. So we're like, I'm talking now, and pretty soon I'm going to pass the ball to you. It's your turn, or you're signaling me, hey, I'm ready to come in. Like, but yeah, so I did an exercise where you just hold eye contact, and it is really powerful and really intimate. And it makes me, you know, there are many people who really struggle with eye contact. This is something I think that, like, these days people are much more aware of how it can be a real source of discomfort and challenge for people. And studying this really made me understand why, because it's something that I had never really focused on before. But once you start paying attention to it, you realize that it is very powerful and ubiquitous. And people who have differences in how they use eye contact, it would be a very big issue.
Wow. You know, one of the things that you read about in the book, just as it relates to this podcasting, because we're not in person, we're over a screen, is that, and I've thought about this a lot, Gretchen, when you look at the screen, because it feels like you're looking at the person, they don't see it as looking at your eyes.
Yes.
Because your eyes are downcast. And so I do the same thing as you.
You look at the camera.
But neither of us are looking at each other then.
No, I mean, this is a thing that's bananas, right? Like, this has to be solved. Yes. Because, yeah, it's like, if you're making eye contact, no one's making eye contact. Yeah, yeah. It's really funny. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so you spend a whole hour with this pretty in-depth conversation. I mean, this is a really special thing to get to talk to someone who's taken their life work and put it in a book and say, well, we never really looked at each other the entire time.
Yeah.
And, okay, in this realm of sight, and I had no idea that this was a thing, you turned your phone on grayscale.
Yes.
Tell us about yes. that.
This is a great, super easy hack that you can use in two different ways. So as we know, our smartphones have been designed by the most brilliant minds to just make them irresistible. Like, they are just so delightful in every way, and we just keep wanting to look at them and look at them. And part of it is has this beautiful, vivid color. And so if you turn your phone to grayscale, instead of being in color, it'll be in black, white, and gray. So it's instead of watching your brand new TV set, you're watching your grandparents' black and white TV set. And the thing is, color is really valuable to us. It's like, it makes things more appealing, but it also makes things much easier to use and navigate. It's like, that's why one of the reasons we developed the ability to see color is like, it makes it easier to do things. If you turn your phone to black, white, and gray, it is just going to be so much less appealing and also harder. It's just harder to use. And so if you're trying to get yourself to stay off your phone, putting it on black, white, and gray is a really good way to just make it less convenient and less appealing. And it's very easy to do and undo very quickly. And so it's not a big deal if you want to even go back and forth. You know, like, you keep it in grayscale, but then, oh, like, your sister sends pictures of her new baby and you're like, okay, I got to see those in color. You can just switch it and switch it back. But here's the drive-by hack. So it's great for you if you're trying to avoid using your phone all the time. It's great with little kids. Because if your kid is one of those kids that's like always wanting to borrow your phone or always wanting to use the iPad, if you switch it to grayscale, just tell your child, like, oh, I'm sorry, it's broken. Like, we're just going to need to get that fixed. And I'm not going to get it fixed right now. Your child will find it much less enticing as well, because for them, it will be much less interesting and much harder to navigate. And so this is a way, you know, at a certain point, they'll be better at fixing the settings than you are. But if you have a little kid, you can take advantage of that window.
Mm-hmm. And even if it was something that you did on the weekends.
Right. Absolutely. Because I think sometimes people are like, well, just don't bring your phone. And it's sometimes that's just not very realistic, because you're like, I have to have my phone with me. But you can do things that are going to make it easier. And one of the things, and I wrote a book about habit formation, Better Than Before. And one of the things I really learned from writing Better Than Before is, we're much better off trying to change our surroundings or our settings or our schedule than trying to change ourselves. So instead of being like, Gretchen, you should walk through Central Park and not look at your phone, where I have to use my willpower not to look at my phone, if I said, hey, Gretchen, turn your phone to grayscale so that if you need to do something, you can, but it's just going to be a hassle. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to be like, you know what? I'm just going to deal with that when I get back home. And it's like, yeah. So I've changed my surroundings and my situation rather than trying to change myself. But that's just easier usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in this realm of sight, I just loved, I mean, really cool thing in this book was you had pictures of examples. It was a really neat action.
Yes.
Expecting that.
Nobody ever has mentioned the pictures, Jenny. And I love putting the photographs in. I love it when there are photographs in books.
Yes.
So I'm glad you noticed. Thank you for commenting on that.
Oh, well, especially they just so drove home the point. And actually, Gretchen, I didn't know that there was an arrow in the FedEx logo.
Isn't that bananas?
Yes, that there was a Hershey's Kiss. And it was actually really neat, Gretchen, because, you know, to your point, even though it's in the book and even though there's a focus on it, you have to pause
yes.
and really look.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, this is brilliant. It brilliantly drives home the point that you have to pause and look, because you're writing about it. You're like, yes. there's an arrow in the FedEx logo. And I had to look for a couple seconds before I found it.
Yes. No, and then once you see it, you realize how clever it is and you can't unsee it. But I'll tell you something funny. So I wanted to get a really good picture of a truck with a FedEx thing. And so I was walking down the street and I saw like a truck that was parked. So I had it was a very unobstructed view. So I was taking pictures, but you know, you have to take a million because there's always like something that you don't notice. I'm taking all the pictures. And so the FedEx driver comes up and is like clearly thinking that I'm casing it. He's like, excuse me, ma'am, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I'm just taking a picture of the arrow in the logo because it's so fun. And he's like, what arrow? I'm like, you are literally a driver for FedEx.
No.
And you have not, you don't know about the arrow. And I blew his mind.
That's a phenomenal story. It blew my mind too.
Yeah. No, you think you've seen it so many times.
Yes. And I thought that was what was so brilliant about it, Gretchen. It was like everyone's seen a Hershey's Kiss bag.
Right.
Everyone has seen the FedEx truck in multiple times. I mean, hundreds of times. Who knows? You drive by it, depending on where you live. I mean, you've seen this your whole life and it never noticed. And so I love that part. And actually, I had no idea. I thought one of the coolest ones was the playing card, the Eight of Diamonds.
What? Yes, that's hard to see. I think that takes me a little while each time.
I had no idea, but we play cards all the time. So it's like, this is fascinating. And the bowl with the feet, I mean, that's in a different section, but
oh, yeah.
Delightful and also very intriguing. And we're like the perfect drive home for the points that you were talking about because you said I was overlooking.
Yes.
And so then I realized, so am I. I am also overlooking. So the site piece, you know, there's so much in there. So for people that are interested in reading this book and it's coming out in paperback, Life in Five Senses, you know, I learned about color constancy, size constancy. I mean, there's a lot of interesting things in there that I had no idea about.
We love bread in our house. I mean, who doesn't? PB&J's, turkey sandwiches, even just morning toast with butter. It's all good in our home. We're always on the hunt for a healthy alternative. That's why our family loves Hero Bread. It is delicious. They make delicious bread and products free of consequences or compromise. They've made carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. We love the classic white bread and the seeded bread, which are both made with olive oil and have a wonderful, rich taste to them. I was so surprised how soft both types of bread were. They were just the right blend of chewiness and sturdiness for making sandwiches. This bread is a favorite in our house for sure. The tortillas were also delicious, and we loved making simple cheese quesadillas as a snack. We're talking 0 net carbs, high in fiber, 0 grams of sugar. What more could you ask for? Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code OUTSIDE at checkout. That's code OUTSIDE at HERO.CO. Hair thinning is complicated. The problem is, it's actually much bigger than your hair alone. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health, and internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement, with over 1 million people seeing thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding. While many supplements rely solely on ingredient studies, Nutrafol clinically tests final formulations to ensure their efficacy. In a clinical study, 86% of women reported improved hair growth after taking Nutrafol Women's Hair Growth Supplement for only 6 months. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code OUTSIDE. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and hairstylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com is spelled Nutrafol.com. Promo code is OUTSIDE. That's Nutrafol.com. Promo code OUTSIDE.
One of the things that you talked about was collecting color. And I related to this because I feel that we're in Michigan. In the fall, I collect color. I feel like that's what I'm doing. I'm collecting all the colors of the leaves. And I'm collecting all the colors of the mums and those fall, those deep, they're deep colors. And I'm like, hopefully this will hold me through the white and gray winter.
Yes.
And you had a really cool thing that you did, which I thought would be a really fun thing to do as a family. You go on a trip, just on your outdoor things. You just went and collected color, things that were a certain color. And by doing that, you notice more.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking in my own life. Like, if we're going to go on this trip, you know, let's all look for something that's this. If you see something that's this color, we're going to go on a little nature hike and we're looking for this specific shade or something.
Yes.
So can you tell about, you were doing scarlet.
Yes. I picked scarlet because I love that word. I love that color. Yeah, you want to pick a color that is not so common that it's overwhelming. So I picked a very particular shade of scarlet. Yeah, and it's just fun because it turns sort of everything into a quest, which is like, oh, can I find something? So it had to be very small. It had to be cheap. It had to be sort of fun, and it had to be scarlet. So like my first thing was a plastic fire truck that I bought at a thrift store. And this was really fun. And one of the things that you find about color, and you see this, you know how now a lot of people with their bookcases will do them by color, that when you see a mass of objects that are the same color, it's very, very pleasing. And so you make something that's kind of an art display, even if the objects themselves are not fine or particularly interesting, but just because the fact that they're the same color, you know, like the same peacock blue or, you know, the same kind of, you know, golden yellow, they'll just look fabulous together. And it is really fun to have that reason to look for it. I have to say, I never thought about doing it out in nature, but that's a great idea. Like there are certain colors that you do see in nature, but they are fairly rare, like a certain kind of orange or something, mm-hmm. Where you're like, okay, let's see if we can. It's not even like we're going to bring it home and physically collect it, but maybe we'll take pictures of it and make a photo collection. But it does, it gets you looking around you in a new way. And it's fun to have these little exercises, I think. I go to the Met every day. That's one of the exercises that I started for the book, but that was years ago. Yeah. I still go every single day. And you know, every year Pantone, the color company, has its color of the year. So every year I get it on my phone and then I go around the Met and look for examples of that color in the Met. And that's super fun. I always enjoy it so much. So it is really fun to have these little quests.
Yeah, little ones, because you talked about how surprises, and I'm not sure because I have quite a bit. Oh, I found it. Surprise stimulates the brain. Mm-hmm. And research shows that people who do new things and visit new places, even something as modest as a trip to a new restaurant, tend to be happier. Or if you go to the same place every day, but you're looking mm-hmm. for something specific that you haven't looked for before, then it's going to be filled with surprises. And what an easy thing to do with kids, because you could go and get a little paint swatch.
Yes.
Those are free. From the hardware store, and you could say we're looking for this shade, and I think it would show to children that even though everything's green, there's a lot of different shades of green. I think that's a really cool idea. So if people want to look the way that you did it, and I think that would be fun too, is when you're out and about in the thrift stores, you were looking for things that were scarlet, and mm-hmm. I thought, oh my goodness, but kids would love that. A family, you know, a family mission, you know, family out. Yes. I think just love it. You could do it for a whole year. What a neat idea about the Pantone. Maybe that's something that you do for the whole year, like as a family.
Yeah.
We're on the lookout for that.
Yes, right. Well, it's interesting because on the Happier podcast, one of the things we've talked about is choosing a signature color for yourself. And what's funny is a lot of people said, well, I didn't even realize I had a signature color, but then I like looked in my dishwasher and I realized that all my dishes are the same teal green. Or now I'm realizing it's great to have the same fuchsia because now every time I'm choosing something, it's like a phone case or a hairband or whatever, I just pick fuchsia because that's my signature color. So people really do. It is really fun. Like a lot of times in family, each child will have a signature color. So it's very easy to tell, okay, well, whose notebook is this? It's like, well, if it's a red notebook, you know, it's Jack's notebook because his signature color is red. And so it is. It's really fun to play with like searching for colors and using colors in all mm-hmm. sorts of ways.
And this seems like a way to really make sure that it has staying power in your long-term life.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
I love this sentence.
Yes.
I love colors that hover on the cusp of other colors. It was really cool stuff in here. I think you had gone through the Met with an artist and I had underlined all these and all these things about this person wouldn't notice. It was the same with the perfume people. You don't spray it and walk through. I was like, oh, I do that.
I know. No, I have all these like little things that I learned, you know, that I jammed it all in there. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Oh, here's something that was really interesting that I didn't do. I did it right at the end when the book was basically done, was I realized that for most people, they have a neglected sense. So there's one of the five senses that they really just don't tune into, whereas other people might be very tuned into that sense. And so I did a quiz because I was like, oh, this is a really great thing to know about yourself, because when you know your neglected sense, then you know you have all this low-hanging fruit in terms of like, can you turn to that sense for comfort or pleasure? Can you use it, as you were mentioning before, to connect with other people or to have adventures? Or can you learn about it and just get more enjoyment out of it? Once you've identified it, because probably you're very aware of your appreciated sense because, you know, you appreciate it, but your neglected sense, you kind of, and I think a lot of times people assume that everybody neglects that sense. They're like, well, most people don't pay much attention to this. It's like, no, people are really different. It's actually, now that tens of thousands of people have taken the quiz, I know that it's surprisingly evenly distributed among the big five senses. So there's a quiz at gretchenrubin.com/quiz, and it will tell you your neglected sense, and it will give you suggestions for how you can use that knowledge about yourself to find new ways to be, you know, happier, healthier, more productive, more creative, more connected to other people, more connected to memories and to the present moment. So that was something really fun. I had to go all the way through doing the book before I kind of realized, wow, I really neglect this sense. And now that I'm talking to all these people who don't neglect the sense, I realize that there's a lot of stuff I could be doing, and I did it.
But this is ironic because all we've talked about is sight, and that's on me because I, you know, those are only the questions I ask. Isn't that funny? You do.
Well, maybe that's what
focus on. Well, you know, if, less on the other.
Yeah. It's interesting about sight. On the one hand, you would say, well, we're wired for sight. It takes up the most real estate in the brain. Sight trumps other senses. So like if there's a disagreement between a sight and another sense, usually sight wins. So when I created the quiz, I thought that no one would have their neglected sense, or very few people would have their neglected sense be sight. But in fact, that's just as common as the other answers, because a lot of people, even we use it in a utilitarian way, but people don't, they don't use it. They don't appreciate it. They don't revel in it the way some people do. So it may be that you just really appreciate sight, you know, which some people do and some people don't.
That is really fascinating. I definitely love the part of the book that gives credence to the fact that everyone sees the world differently, or hears the world differently, or smells the world differently.
So that's interesting.
Like even the colors. I mean, it was fascinating. The examples you gave were really cool. And you say, and I thought this is a piece that, and this really could affect your life quality. When one of my senses was particularly satisfied, I feel less desire to stimulate the other senses. So I love this. When I feel like snacking out of boredom, common thing, if I put on perfume or did something to gratify one of my other senses, my impulse to snack faded away. Wow.
Yeah. There's sort of two theories why that might be the case. One might be that when you really satisfy one sense, that kind of gives the brain what it needs. It gives you that sense of satisfaction. Or it might be that it's just distracting, because instead of thinking like, oh, I want to head to the fridge, I'm like, oh no, I'm going to go to one of my most appreciated senses is smell. And so I have like all my favorite perfumes. I have all kinds of odd smells. I've got a whole smell collection. So then I'm like, oh, I'm off to my smell collection. What am I going to pick? And then I put it on and I smell it. And so I just distracted. Or maybe it's both. It's probably both of those factors working together. But it's really helpful to know that you can take advantage of that in your own life.
Yeah, it works. It works. And we've been trying to work on touch. So more so because there's these books and research that says if you work with your hands, it helps your brain release dopamine.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So if you got a little cross stitch kit in your purse, which is what we've been doing, there's all that tactile stuff that's happening. I mean, it even takes your focus off of emotional pain, and it does a lot. You know, this book is about how simple things, I mean, these are simple things. I'm looking for a color.
Yes.
But we're chasing happiness. I mean, this is your expertise. I mean, the podcast, 220 million downloads. And that was, I mean, this book came out last year. So, I mean, I'm sure it's like millions and millions more. This is what you're talking about. Happier with Gretchen Rubin. And the concept is look for things that are scarlet. You know, I mean, these, you know, it's just all of these ideas that are like, oh, I could do that right now.
Yeah, I have to say my approach to happiness is very much kind of like the Ben Franklin approach. I'm like, what can the average person do on the average day without taking a lot of time, energy, or money that can make them happier? Because I think, you know, I think it's easy to fantasize about like, oh, I'll go, you know, like a silent meditation retreat, or I'm going to go across the world and, you know, write in a notebook with a fountain pen. And it's just, for a lot of people, including me, that's just not very realistic. I'm very interested in like, what are the little things that a person could do that could make them happier, healthier, more productive, or more creative? What's realistic?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's filled with realistic ideas. Let me spread the love here, since everyone has different senses that are their main ones. Okay. With the sense of smell, there was this idea. I was like, whoa, this idea of wearing a certain scent for a period of time.
Yes.
And that's it. Only for that
Yes.
period. Why would someone do that?
Well, because of the way that it enhances memories. And one of the things that the senses are really good at is bringing back memories. So if you see a photograph of your childhood bedroom, or you smell a food that your grandmother used to make for you when you were little, or you hear a song that was like your favorite song in high school, all those memories come flooding back. You can really harness this. And so, for instance, with the smell, somebody said that she picked a perfume like for her wedding perfume. So she wore it to her rehearsal dinner, to all the kind of showers ahead of time, at the wedding, of course, and during her honeymoon, she wore that perfume. And then every year on her anniversary, she wears it again. And so this is a way to, like, that perfume is so associated with that time. And I just thought this was such a, like, a creative, interesting way to, to harness the power of scents. And then Andy Warhol, of course, the artist, he would do this. He would wear a perfume all the time. Then he would sort of retire it because he was very interested in sort of time capsules and hanging on to time and, you know, marking off time. And so he did it through perfume. So it's something that you can really play with. Like, maybe there's a perfume every year when you go to the lake for 2 weeks with your family, like there's the perfume you wear then. Just the way you associate, oh, the smell of those trees or the smell of the lake. It could just be like another element that you would add to kind of harness that, the specifics of that experience.
Never heard of it. Never thought of it. What an idea.
Yeah.
It is. It is a creative and interesting way. And with your children, I mean, and you wrote, I told you there's so many things I'm reading this book and I was like, oh, I do this too. I don't know if I've ever had a book that I've read that I have so many times been like, oh, wait, yep, I do that.
Oh, that's so fun to hear.
I worry our apartment smells.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, let me say.
Oh, so do I.
Here's a thing. Back to what you were saying earlier about how everybody experiences the world so differently, which is really, I knew that intellectually, but when you're really confronted with it and lots of examples of it, it is bonkers how much we're all in our own world. And this is the thing. You cannot smell your home the way a guest smells it, because the smell is our brain's attempt to give us information and new information. So anything that's like a change, and especially anything that could be dangerous. And so what happens with smell is when it's very familiar, it fades out of our awareness so that it doesn't block out new information. So this is the thing where you're baking chocolate chip cookies, you smell, and then the smell goes away. But then when somebody else comes in, they're like, oh, wow, I really smell the chocolate chip cookies. But for you, it's just faded away. And this can be frustrating when there's something beautiful, like you want to smell the cherry blossoms. You want to just smell and smell and smell and smell, but then it goes away. But this also happens, you habituate to it, like with a space. And so if every time you come into your apartment, it smells the same way, you become used to it. And so you're not aware of it. I also worry about that. I worry that our apartment smells like dog food. And with the Happier podcast, we got a question from a listener who said, because somehow we were talking about this, and she said, well, this explains a huge conflict that I've had with my son and my daughter-in-law, because like they live in a trailer home and it smells so strongly of air freshener that I can barely stand to go in there. And they keep insisting that it's my imagination. And I'm like, well, you're both right. They don't smell it, but you smell it because you're just visiting from time to time. And so understanding that can sometimes help you see why you might be disagreeing with people, and you're like, I'm really thinking, where is this coming from? It's like, oh yeah, because they're experiencing things in a different way.
Once again, goes back to those relationships. So interesting.
Yes.
Okay, so for the hearing crowd,
yeah,
phenomenally interesting. There was this discussion about watching a television program that's in a different yes. language that has subtitles. This is so wild to me, Gretchen. Can't make sense of what's happening if I can't hear the voice, even though the voice is in another language.
Yes. Okay. Try this at home. This is really interesting. Okay. So turn on a show, you know, like now there's so many excellent French shows and, you know, all these shows, and you have the subtitles turned on, but the sound is off. And try to make sense of what's going on and what you realize. And part of this is music cues too. So, but when you can't hear people's voices, it's very hard to tell, like, are they joking? Are they being sarcastic? Like, And this is even true cross-culturally, where you're like, well, their intonations and their patterns could be different. And yet we still get a lot of information from hearing people's voices. And if you don't have that, even if you know what they're saying through the subtitles, it's much, much less enjoyable.
I mean, that is fascinating. And you wrote, we recognize hundreds of voices. I just thought it was so special, because the same with the faces. I mean, we're,
yes,
it's a reminder that we're so unique. And I've thought about that so often. It's like everyone has two eyes and a nose and a mouth. Like, how are we telling everyone apart?
Yes, it's
the hair color. I mean, it's like you don't have, most people don't have, I mean, you could dye it, but like then the hair color is like blonde, brown, black, red. I mean, there's not that many options here. And
right,
same with our eyes. I mean, there's a few different colors and a few different shades. And yet, you know, you can run into someone 20 years later and
yes,
you know who they are. And like you said,
yes,
I loved how you worded it, even from different angles, their profile.
Yeah. Yeah.
And same with our voices. We can make good guesses about a speaker's age, health, education, background, personality, and social status, even if we don't already know them. I mean, it's really interesting. And you have in here, which I thought was worth reading, is a manifesto for listening. And I thought that was one of my favorite parts too. And silencing a crowd by blowing on a harmonica.
That's just a good, like, fun little tip. Yeah, if you're like standing up in front of a meeting and nobody will stop and the people won't stop talking, is you blow on a harmonica. And everybody's like a kindergartner. We all know what that means. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I loved that. I'm thirsty. Just think how many times you hear that when you're at the sports field with your kids or out on a hot summer hike or just driving around in the car. Water is obviously a go-to, but have you ever thought about healthy hydration? Element is a zero-sugar electrolyte drink mix born from the growing body of research revealing that optimal health outcomes occur at sodium levels 2 to 3 times government recommendations. Electrolyte deficiency or imbalance can cause headaches, cramps, fatigue, brain fog, and weakness. Element helps anyone stay hydrated, as each stick pack delivers a meaningful dose of electrolytes free of sugar, artificial colors, or other dodgy ingredients found in popular electrolyte and sports drinks. That's why Element is trusted and used by everyone, from the Olympic weightlifting team, NFL and NBA players, Stanford neuroscientists, and everyday moms like me. Our kids actually fight over them. We keep the stick packs with us when we are on the go. They're super convenient. Head directly to our exclusive page at drinklmnt.com/1000hours to receive a free Element sample pack with any order. That's drinklmnt.com/1000hours to get your free sample pack with your order. It's no secret. We love music in our household. And music lessons don't need to be expensive, boring, or stressful. Vogtberg Music Academy offers online lessons that siblings can share in the comfort of your own home. Instead of dragging kids to lessons and paying hundreds of dollars a month for one student, use my code OUTSIDE to get 50% off the first month when your children learns piano, fiddle, guitar, mandolin, or ukulele at vogtbergmusicacademy.com. For only $15, get weekly lessons and practice principles, 24/7 access to your instructor, live student onboarding calls, and video vaults that provide dozens of extra lessons for students who want to progress faster. With Vogtberg Music Academy, you will never have to nag your children to practice as they work toward earning badges on their success path and performing for community student showcases. Once again, use my code OUTSIDE to give it a try. You get 50% off this month and give your children a lifelong love of music at vogtbergmusicacademy.com. That's spelled V-O-E-T-B-E-R-G musicacademy.com. And use code OUTSIDE when you sign up. So as far as taste goes, really cool idea. Never would have ever considered, never thought about it. Will be so fun for a family, whether you're eating indoors or outdoors. I always say everything tastes better outside, is to try and eat blindfolded.
Yes. Yeah, we went to an actual restaurant. My husband, one of my daughters and I went to an actual restaurant in New York City where it's called Dining in the Dark, and they put an eye mask on you and you didn't know what you were eating. And it was actually really fascinating. But you're right, you can do this at home. Just put blindfolds on. It might be even better, because what was funny about Dining in the Dark is clearly a lot of people were very anxious that we would be kind of led to eat things that we wouldn't otherwise want to eat because we didn't know what it was. And so there was a lot of kind of suspicion about it, which I felt like actually detracted from the experience, because what I really liked about it was just when one sense fades away, there's more, you can put more of your awareness towards whatever remains. And so I think actually sitting around a picnic bench with your family, everybody just, you know, putting a bandana tied around their eyes and eating hot dogs and French fries would actually, I think, allow you to really focus in on the textures, the tastes, the, you know, the flavors more easily, because then you're not distracted by like, what the heck is this anyway? Which I was very distracted by. And it turns out a lot of people were very distracted by. It was fun that it was a mystery. That was kind of fun. Like you could have a mystery element, like what ice cream flavor is this? Yeah. But you didn't want to be worrying about like, well, what kind of like, yeah, would I be unsettled if I knew what this was? But yeah, it can be really fun. Oh, here's a fun idea for family. Speaking of taste, I haven't done this, but I really want to do it. Again, a happier listener had suggested it. Is, you know how, you know, these days, like ice cream stores often have all these kind of really kind of unconventional flavors. And it's like corn chowder ice cream. And you're like, is that even good? So what her family does for Thanksgiving is instead of having, you know, traditional pie or whatever, they go and they buy all of those odd flavors of ice cream that everybody's, you know, curious about. And then they just pass around the containers and everybody just takes a scoop or two. And then they compare, like, I like this one, I like that one, you know, which one's best? This one's terrible. And she said, what's really nice is this is something that everybody can participate in. Like a three-year-old has just as many opinions as like a 93-year-old. Mm-hmm. Everybody can enjoy it. And there's sort of a playful quality to it. And it also, it's that thing where you're like, I've always been curious about this rosemary and thyme ice cream flavor, but I don't want to like dedicate a whole serving to it. But so anyway, I just thought that was a good example of how. And then it's something that we can all connect around. It's a funny memory that we can use the senses in different ways. We can find new sort of imaginative, creative ways to connect through our senses. And yet it brings us all together in the present moment. It gives us memories. It allows us to do kind of novel, adventurous things. And so part of what was fun about writing Life in Five Senses was just hearing all these interesting things people do and then getting to try them myself.
People are brilliant, aren't they?
They are brilliant. The stuff people come up with is so interesting to me. That's part of what I love about just, I feel so fortunate to be a writer today when there's so much engagement. I know a lot of people feel like social media and email and everything is can be negative, but for me, it's like the world is my research assistant. And there are, I wrote this book about the four tendencies. It's this personality framework that I created that divides people into upholders, questioners, obligers, and rebels. You can take that quiz too, GretchenRubin.com/quiz. And just because people are constantly ever since that book came out, sending me examples, insights, observations. And it's like, I could never have developed such a deep understanding on my own, but hearing like, what do people do with their families to like tap into their five senses? Oh, here's one. Okay, here's a perfect example. So it's one of the things that I did for the book is I did a five senses portrait. And this is a wonderful exercise to do. It makes a great gift. It's a great thing to do where you do a five senses portrait. So seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, you write down five notable or favorite memories associated with it. So you could do a person, like I did a five senses portrait of my husband, but you could do a place like a five senses portrait of the Ozarks or a five senses portrait of an adventure like that family camping trip. You could do it as a family, like let's all do our five senses. We'll do it together. We're in the car for 2 hours. Let's do our five senses portrait of the trip we just took. And then you create it. And it's a great way to create a very concrete, vivid memory of something. But here's what I never thought of, which many people immediately did, which is you use it to remember a person who has died. Many people said the first thing I did was to do a five senses portrait of my grandmother or whatever, and often it was for a child. It was like, this child will never have his or her own memories of this beloved grandparent, but I will do a five senses portrait so they know how she always, this was her favorite perfume. This was like with my grandfather. He used lava soap. He was a railroad engineer. So it has a grit in it. So it was, you know, for the oil that he would get on his hands. And You know, and I think my children don't know about the lava soap of my grandfather, but by doing this five senses portrait, it brings it to my mind. It's something that I've always known, I've always treasured, but somehow it was just lay in my mind untapped. I guess, why would I be thinking about this lava soap? But doing this exercise sort of brought it to the front and then gave me a reason to share it. So that was something, you know, here I'd been writing this whole book, Life of Five Senses. I'd done a five senses portrait myself. But then I threw the idea into the world and all these people immediately saw a use for it that I had never, never imagined.
Right, because people just take things and they're brilliant with it.
They are brilliant.
The ice cream idea is so fun because, I mean, everyone goes to a place and they're like, who buys that one?
I know exactly. Yeah, you're like peanut butter and jelly ice cream. Really?
Yeah, they'd be like, well, we've tried this one and you know, and you get it. I love that. My grandma, when we would spend the night, I don't think we ever really took like a full bath there, but we would sit in the bathroom, like on the edge of the tub, and she would wash our bare feet with a warm rag. And, it tickles a little bit. And, but I don't know if I would ever really thought about it. You don't really conjure those things up. They're in you unless you really think, what are some of the really specific things that I remember? And so and that's the touch.
Yes.
And you talked about how touch is different. This one is your whole skin. It's your whole body.
Yes.
Covered with these receptors. One of the ideas that you had in there was using props. And I thought that was a great one. We're thrown into a lot of situations, I think, especially these days where life is changing so fast. I think we're thrown into a lot more situations than maybe people used to that are a little unnerving.
Yes.
Maybe, for generations past, it was like, things were somewhat consistent. You could kind of expect a little bit more the trajectory of your life. And now things are, they're shifting and that's fun. But you do have these times where you feel a little bit thrown off. So you talk about using props. And I had never heard like these calm strips.
Yes. I have one in my pocket right now. Yeah, these are strips that have textures on them that you can rub between your fingers. And it's very calming. There are fidget spinners. There are pop toys. It is very like, and this is something like if you're on a Zoom call and you're muted, you can just sit there and use your fidget. It helps you stay calm. I mean, this is why they give them to children often in classrooms. But, in terms of calm, one of the things that was funny about writing Life of Five Senses is I noticed so many things that I did unconsciously. Like I understood why I did it. And one of the things that I realized is that if I'm in a situation where I'm a little uneasy, like if I'm going into a cocktail party where I don't really know anybody, like a gathering, or I'm behind the stage before I'm getting ready to speak, I will often hold a pen. Even in a situation where I have no paper. So it's like, why do you have a pen if you have no paper? And like, what's that about? But I just realized like, I like holding a pen. And I thought that was like, well, maybe that's because that's like a badge. There you go. You've got one. It's a badge of-
She's not even going to see this though, because she's looking at the camera.
Oh, right. Yeah. It's a bright pink pen.
Here's my pen.
Here's your pen. I thought, well, maybe it's kind of a badge of my identity. And that's why I'm finding it comforting. But I actually think it's just that it's something to hold. It's like something in my hand holding something gives me comfort. And now I really tap into that. So I will make sure that I have a pen, because when I did it unconsciously, like sometimes I had a pen, sometimes I didn't. But now I'm like, oh, let me make sure that I have a pen. And, sometimes just having these things where you're like, okay, these are my kind of like comfort objects. Like I'm going to do this to help myself feel more comfortable. It's soothing. It's like lucky objects. It turns out that if you think something brings you luck, it actually makes you perform better. So it's like, if I think that a pen is going to calm me down, probably it will help me feel calm because I've decided that that's how it makes me feel. Yeah. So it's really interesting how, having things in our hands is very important to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just, I find myself, if we go to the beach, we live not super far from Lake Michigan. I mean, I just, when I'm sitting out, everyone does it. You're lifting the sand and letting it fall.
Yes.
I'm an adult. Why am I doing this?
Yes.
There's something about it. And to your point, a little bit of a distraction when you're talking about, you can use one sense to help distract. And if you're feeling nervous, so many great practical ideas in this book. Can we hit one last topic? Because I know we're right at the end here, about flowers. And my whole life, I was like, I'm not going to buy flowers. They die.
Yes.
What a waste. And I have really changed. And actually, we plant a flower garden now, and it's one of my favorite, absolute favorite things I do. And I'm usually an on-time person, but in the summer, I'm always late because I'm bringing you flowers out of my garden. I'm
going to make a little bit. Oh, that's so lovely.
Really special. Just throw them in a mason jar. But I loved what you had a quote from your daughter. She says, "My mommy is having a flower party." So you told a quick story about how you were struggling with technology. I mean, as we all are, it doesn't seem to work a lot of times, and you want it to work and it can cause stress and you're trying to have meetings. And you said you brought flowers into your office and you were astonished.
Yes. No, they're just life. They're color. They're like an everyday luxury, because now you can get flowers, you know, pretty inexpensively, and they just bring so much joy. It is astonishing.
Yeah. I love this idea of a few modest splurges to add beauty.
Yes.
And I have a tendency to save my nicest things, which I think is something that parents do. And I did this a lot with clothes. You know, it's especially when you're first starting out, it's like you're just, a lot of times we did a very limited budget. And so your kids have, you know, one or two really nice things that you love when they wear, but you don't put them in it because you're afraid that they're going to ruin it. And then they've grown out.
Then they've grown out. Yeah. I know, like that adorable dress. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, let them go on a hike in it, because then you're going to have the photos. Then you're going to have the memories of that, instead of they're just going to grow out of it and they're not going to have hardly worn it. So many things, like I said, I related in this book. Gretchen, I just loved it. Life in Five Senses, just one of many, many, many wonderful books that you have. This in particular is coming out in paperback soon, so people can check that out. Your podcast, like I said, it's like one of the top rated. It was like the 0.01% top 0.01% of all podcasts. Happier with Gretchen Rubin, with your sister, which is really special. Top ranking award winning podcast. And you talked about your website, GretchenRubin.com. Lots of quizzes there. And then you're on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. So people can find you all over the place. Lots of books, lots of things to read. Thank you for being here. We always end our podcast with the same question. And that question is, what's a favorite memory from your childhood that was outside?
Oh, I know exactly what it was. So in my childhood front yard, there was a beautiful tree that had a very complicated set of tree roots that, you know, kind of, you know how a lot of times there's sort of like these, it was like a little landscape. And I would take a garden hose and hold it up against the bark so that it would make waterfalls and pools. And it was sort of like a Chinese, of course, at the time I wasn't like, this is like a Chinese landscape from a scroll. But now I love Chinese landscapes, because it's very much that, like, very vertical, a lot of waterfalls, like craggy, little outcroppings. And I would just would be mesmerized by just holding the with nothing more complicated than, you know, holding the hose against this tree for hours. So that is a very beautiful aesthetic memory that I have from childhood.
And if you think about the senses, right, it's like you've got the sight and all of the differing ways that the water falls. And
yes, water against like tree bark is that very fresh outside living smell, right? And then the mud squishing between my toes, and and the beauty of it, and the sound that like the little waterfall would make. I didn't even think about it. That's probably why I love doing it so much, is it was so satisfying. No taste. Taste is the one that often falls off.
I wonder though, like for me, it's like, you know, whenever you're in a spot where water is spraying, I think you get a little bit of, you know,
you're right. I'm sure that now that you say that, I remember drinking and water from a garden hose has a very distinct tang to it. 100%. That's a full five senses memory. That's why it's so vivid in my mind, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of our outdoor memories involve all five senses. And I think it leads to a fuller family life and a fuller childhood, because
absolutely,
we remember, and our kids will remember conversations like, oh, the last time we were here, we talked about, what would our names be if we spelled them backwards? And because all of those senses are involved, it helps to solidify more in your mind. So, I mean, this is a very important book, I think, for families today, especially given that we live in a highly technological world. Life in Five Senses, How Exploring the Senses Got Me Out of My Head and Into the World. Gretchen Rubin, I've been talking about this with my mom for weeks.
Excellent.
It's been like our main topic of conversation. Even last night, I was like, it's tomorrow morning. So this has been such an honor and such a delight. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I feel like we could talk all day. We're interested in so many of the same subjects. I really appreciate it.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of there, life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking.